Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey, Trailblazers. This is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and, in the process, support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. So currently, if you look at the trips that you do, whether it's day hiking or backpacking trips, do you prefer solo trips, group hikes, with family?
I guess I like both. I do love being by myself. I'm a very independent person who definitely thrives when I'm by myself. And I live in a very rural area, so I sort of fill that need by going on solo hikes literally every morning. I have a tiny little hill behind my house that I hike up and down endlessly almost every morning. But most of my hikes nowadays are usually with my husband. We've spent more nights in a tent together than I could probably count, and he's a great... great hiking and camping partner. And I've also done a lot of backpacking trips with my mom. We try to do a backpacking trip every year. I actually got her into backpacking when she was in her late 50s. I took her on her very first backpacking trip ever. And she has gone on, she backpacks way more than me nowadays, right? Because the sort of joke of starting, you start an outdoor gear company because you love being in the outdoors so much. And then guess what? You never get to be in the outdoors anymore. Because yep. now you got this company to run. So I'm kind of in what I feel like is a different phase of my life. And I'm not the type of person who's going to fight it and wish that I was somewhere else. I'm just enjoying where I am. I also ride a motorcycle, and my husband and I ride together, and we started doing little trips on the motorcycle because that's easier to pack for than a backpacking trip. And that has helped us keep that feeling of adventure alive, even when we can't get out on a backpacking trip. But I think there is something special about going on a trip with other people and having the ability to reflect on that experience later with them. When you've gone by yourself, I think that's great too, but you're the only one who had that experience, and you could tell other people about it, but they weren't there. And so I enjoy having had experiences with others and being able to reflect on those moments with them.
Yeah. And, you know, like for me, I love the Guadalupe Mountain National Park. It's my heaven on earth. And you can really put together some very difficult trips. 9 of the highest peaks in Texas are there, all over 8,000 feet.
Wow.
You know, a lot of the peak. Oh, I'll send you pictures and you'll be like, there's no way this is Texas.
I would love to see that because I have never done any, I've been to Texas many times because the BNSF Railways headquarters is in Dallas-Fort Worth area. DFW, not much hiking.
No, you get like some flat lake area, but West Texas, I mean, I don't know how many mountains they have over 8,000. I know just in the park, there's 9 and just beautiful, beautiful. But you get into situations and whether Guadalupe, she's broken you, you know, you have to earn everything that you get from that park, your adventure, you have to earn it. Whether she's broken you, whether you've experienced something, I cried more in front of people and at that park than if I had a nickel for every time, I'd be a bazillionaire.
Oh, that's amazing.
So speaking of that, what do you think, and maybe we've kind of touched on it, but what do you think is your most beautiful or most meaningful place that you've ever hiked?
I already talked about the winds.
Mm-hmm.
That one is pretty special to me, but I'm trying to think of other special hikes that I've gone on because I feel like they're all so unique. And I think the other one that really stands out to me was I mentioned earlier that I had done that trek in Bhutan back in 2011. I did about 138 miles through the Himalayas, and that was just this otherworldly experience. I had never hiked in another country like that before, mm-hmm. and Bhutan is a really special place. The Himalayas are special mountains, and I got to hike up really high, up around 17,000 feet. And it was it's hard for me to describe it. I was at a time in my life where I was sort of trying to figure out what I was going to do next because I was about to get laid off from my job as a park ranger. And I knew that that was coming and really felt very lost. And I think that trip connected me to this sense of everything's going to be okay and you'll figure it out. Like you just kind of have to trust yourself. And so I have that Bhutan has always been a really special place to me and hopefully I'll get to go back there again someday.
That's awesome. Wow. Huh. So if you could drop everything tomorrow, Kula Cloth gets put on autopilot, everything is rocking.
Oh,
what
man.
What is one hike anywhere in the world where you would want to go? I guess you just answered it, huh?
Well, so I have a second one that I thought of. Okay. So I would definitely finish the snowman trek, but I love hiking in the desert and specifically the desert in Utah. And I know the entire trail doesn't go only in Utah, parts of it do, but I would love to complete the Hayduk Trail, which is an off-trail route through the desert. I think it starts in near Arches or Zion or something along those lines, and then it travels for a few hundred miles, and a lot of it is off-trail. I've never had a strong desire to do like the Pacific Crest Trail or the Appalachian Trail, but The Hayduke Trail, definitely the adventure, the route finding on that definitely appeals to me. And then the Pacific Northwest Trail, that trail also feels enticing to me. That's the one that goes from the Olympics to Glacier National Park. So it's more of a horizontal trail. And that one just sounds so spectacular and different. So if I could put everything on autopilot, I'd probably do one of those two. Maybe both.
Yeah. I think we touched on kind of the story behind how Kula Cloth was born. And maybe, I don't know if there's anything that we could cover, but also maybe with the focus of like, what was that initial decision or moment where you're like, I'm doing this?
So I mentioned that I had the idea for it in the Wind River Range on that hike of the high route. And when that idea happened, I was actually in the midst of taking a photo of my ugly blue microfiber pea cloth
because I was that.
I was going to send it to a friend as a joke. And as I'm taking this photo, I have it all set up perfectly, you know, following the rule of thirds, whatever the heck that is for photography. I've got this beautiful, beautiful photo set up. And it was, you know, it's funny, like the Musical Mountaineers, that idea just kind of popped into my head. Well, same thing here. Popped into my head. Why isn't that a real piece of gear? And when, as a backpacking instructor, I would always explain a pea cloth to people, and you kind of get that sort of totally understandable reaction. Like, that's the same reaction that I had. And I remember thinking, wait a second, why has nobody turned this into a real piece of gear? We spend $500 on a tent, but the piece of gear that we use to literally touch and clean off the sensitive part of our body looks like I pulled it out of a rag bin at a Jiffy Lube. And I bet that if I could design this more intentionally so that it was designed for the purpose of hygiene, maybe more people would be into it. And maybe it could actually kind of create a buzz around Leave No Trace and encourage people to start to incorporate this into their backpacking gear. And also, if word got out about this product too, maybe they're these beginner backpackers who are going out there for the first time. If they knew about this ahead of time, I couldn't even imagine what it would be like to go into my very first backpacking trip already having a hygiene plan and knowing what to do. And I just thought, I want people to have that experience on their trip. Not what I did, where I was freaking out about having to poop or pee. And so I went
and
home.
Stealing toilet paper.
And stealing. I'm a thief. And so I went home from that backpacking trip. And of course, if anybody who's listening to this podcast is the type of person who has had an idea while you're on a backpacking trip, which a lot of us do because we're in this open place of connection with the universe and woo-woo. And that's when ideas come and flow and we're creative and we start, you know, like get all jazzed up about the idea. And then we go home and what do? We start thinking about it. And then, and then we start listening to other people. And then we start telling ourselves it's not possible and that nobody would buy it. And we shut ourselves down before we even let ourselves get started. And so that's literally what I did. I got home. I did a little bit of research into sewing, which I didn't know how to do. I did a little bit of research into fabric, which I knew nothing about. And I told myself, nobody's going to buy this dumb product. And I quit. And then I had this about a year later, I had this near-death experience driving home from a snowshoe trip and where I spun out on the highway into the path of an oncoming semi-truck. And to make a very long story short, obviously, happy ending. Here I am. but it was the wake-up call that I needed because in the moment of it happening, I realized that I was free of fear because I didn't have the time to think. I was just there. I was so present in the moment that there was no space for me to create a story around what was happening. And I looked at the things that I was afraid of in my life, like starting a pea cloth company of all things. And I realized that the things that I was afraid of were things that I was telling myself. It was like, you can't do this. Nobody will buy it. You're dumb. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to lose your house if you leave your job to do this company. It was all those things and all these what ifs that were completely imaginary. None of them had happened. They were all just in my head. And that incident woke me up to that. And all of a sudden, I had this sort of cataclysmic, like, what am I doing with my life type of moment. And I started that day after that incident, I started a meditation practice. I started a gratitude practice. I mean, I literally did a 180 degree about face, and I started an online hiking group on Facebook where I was just teaching backpacking for free. I ended up getting an offer to be a trail scout for Backpacker Magazine. And it was like, the more that I kept taking the steps, all the pieces just started to like fall into place. And then this idea for the pea cloth came back. And I remember thinking, wait, why didn't I do this before? I mean, what do I really have to be afraid of here? My pea cloth company failing? Like, oh, well. Yeah. And so I just started, I borrowed a serger, which is a type of sewing machine, from a friend. She taught me how to sew a straight line, although I couldn't even do that. And I went to a store, just started buying fabric, started calling fabric mills, just obsessively like threw myself into it. And what was so cool about the experience is that I had always been taught and believed that you had to know all the answers and have the perfect plan before you could actually do anything. But what I learned was that if you just start doing things, the plan builds itself. Mm-hmm. And so as I started taking all these steps, it was like people were just falling out of the woodwork. I found a factory and I found a fabric manufacturer and I found somebody who could help me with art. And it was just like, once you got started and had the energy and that momentum going, all of a sudden it just picked up and kept going. And I launched the website in July of 2018 and started shipping out the first products in November of 2018. And now here we are. We celebrated our 7th birthday in July, and now Kula it's sold all over the world, and it's still we're still technically a really tiny business. But everything it's hard to believe that it started from an idea. And so I just love the concept that thoughts become things. You know, yeah. You can have an idea, and if you believe in it and continue to push it forward, even without knowing how it could be possible, it has a way of coming into existence. And watching that happen has just been so rewarding and beautiful.
I don't know that anybody could argue against this, but you've created a movement.
I agree. I agree with you.
Hands down, no questions asked. It's a movement. So the longest trail in Texas is about, the current location is, both endpoints are about an hour north of me, and it's 96.4 miles hiking it on the main trail with the loops. It's 128 miles. So the Lone Star Hiking Trail has a club, and I volunteer to lead hikes maybe like once a month. Not so much in the summer because the horse flies are horrible, but you know, in the fall and the winter. And so, you know, it's usually beginner hikers. and we do about 6 to 7 miles. And I don't know if I preface this, but this is how I found out about Kula Cloth.
Oh.
And so we got about halfway, and then, you know, all right, everybody, guys, use the restroom over here. Girls, you know, ladies, if you have to go over here, use the restroom. And then we eat a snack and then head back. And so, you know, everybody's separated. And then there was, you know, I'm like, all right, we got to be heading back because, you know, I need to get back to the trailhead by a certain time. And so there was a group of ladies that were kind of off and just sitting there chatting. And I'm like, all right, you know, let's kind of get together. Let me do a count to make sure I have everybody. And they were ignoring me. And so, you know, I walked over there. I'm like, all right, hey, we got to get going. And they were talking about the Kula Cloth. And wow. There was a group of about, God, 7 or 8 women. And they were, you know, one lady had it and she was showing every, you know, all the other ladies how to use it. And and I'm like, what is that? And so she's explaining to me, and I'm like, you know, as a guy, I never thought of these, like guys, it's a lot easier than it is for women.
It is.
And I never thought about this stuff. And I'm like, I immediately said, whoever thought of this is going to be a bazillionaire.
Oh.
Like, this idea is amazing.
For the record, I am not yet.
You're not a bazillionaire?
Not all quite right. Yet. I have not quite hit a bazillion.
And then, of course, you know, everybody, oh, I'm going to get one. And then, you know, we get to the trailhead and I'm like, look, the Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeves are my gear, but everybody ask, you know, I don't remember her name, ask her about this Kula Cloth. This thing is, especially for the women, it's amazing. And
yeah,
check it out. And that's how I discovered it.
That is so cool. And it is so exciting for me to hear that because, I mean, the word Kula means community. I intentionally chose a word that didn't sound like a joke because so many hygiene products, specifically those that are typically designed for women, they all are kind of funny, ha-ha.
Gimmicky type.
Yeah. And that's fine. I get it. I joke a lot about hygiene because it's like this funny thing that does connect us, all humans poop and pee. But I also wanted it to have this greater sense of something else with it. And I wanted it to invite conversations because back when I went backpacking, that was what was missing. You know, nobody asked me, hey, what's your hygiene plan? Nobody was open to talking about pooping and peeing on the trail because there wasn't even an easy way to bring it up. And as a result of that, I never even asked. And I really feel, I hear stories all the time now, and I see orders coming in to the Kula Cloth website where people write a note in their order that says, going on my first backpacking trip, I'm so excited to get this. And that just makes me so excited because I know that these people are not going to have that kind of embarrassing, shameful experience that I did. They're going to actually go out there and have the backpacking trip that they want to have. And realistically, that I think the bigger piece of taking care of yourself hygienically is that it's more about the bigger picture of that experience.
No, like, I can't imagine to have created something. Like I said a second ago, I would argue that there's no way you would convince me that you didn't create a movement, but also to know that you created something that positively, without a shadow of a doubt, impacts people in that kind of way. That's spectacular.
It's pretty cool. And I don't take it for granted. And I'm a pretty dedicated worker and I'm pretty dedicated to what I do. And I mean, I have literally devoted my life to sort of continually serving the outdoor community in whatever way I can. And for me, just having the piece of gear is not enough. That's why we do free education classes. I teach hygiene workshops all the time. We and myself and my employees just go above and beyond to really acknowledge the humanness behind every order that goes out into the world. And I think that has been a really special part of the experience, is to be able to take a business and not just have it be about how many of these things can I sling out there? How much money can I make? It's really about how can I connect with people genuinely? How can I make them feel like they belong outside? How can I make them more comfortable outside? And I feel like at the end of the day, if we've done that, we're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about it before the podcast. That's one of the reasons that I continued the podcast. You know, I started it as a hobby, and then you start to understand and hear the stories with businesses like yourself. And man, I have a passion to get the word out, because all you guys, the risk that you take, you're supporting the local communities. So vocation, people have jobs. You're supporting our hiking and backpacking community. And, you know, people find value in it, and they're, you know, they're adding that to their gear. And, you know, it's just, man, it's amazing. And yeah, I mean, it's, and you know, and also just to, from listening to your story, Ben with Hilltop Packs, Marion Outdoors, Andrew, like it's truly incredible.
It's definitely been a challenging, way more challenging than I expected experience, because there's so much that I don't know, so much that I still don't know. But I feel like every day I get better and better at figuring things out. And if I show up and do my best and make my intention every day to bring a little bit of good into the world, then usually I feel like I've done a decent job every day.
Absolutely. So do you remember your first prototype?
I do. And I wish I had it. I wish I had it here with me. I'll have to send you a photo of it. And it is the only way that I actually have it. And I should have brought it for this interview. The best way that I can describe it with words is that it does not look like a square or a diamond. It looks like shapes, as in multiple. Like there's this pinched end. It's basically just two pieces of fabric sewn together in a completely unrecognizable shape, because I had no idea how to sew. So you know what? That Kula is by far the most special one to me, because I think it represents the first time in my life that I, number one, hadn't talked myself out of doing something for the billionth time. And number two, I had sort of said yes to this idea, and I had taken the first step towards actually making something. And it's so cool now to hold up a real one of our current Kulas and compare it to this. And I hope people see that, because it's easy to look at a brand and meet me where I am, which is right here. You know, you can go into REI and purchase a Kula cloth now. And so it's easy to think, oh, it's just always been like this. But no, realistically, Kula cloth started with me in my guest room sewing completely unrecognizable shapes and hoping that someday it would look okay.
I have a question, and it's when you, let's say the website hit, you're fully committed to this idea. Did you face any skepticism early on? And if so, you know, like how you described, and we all are, we get into our heads to not do something. And how did you, if that was the case? How did you push through it?
I absolutely had a lot of skepticism, mostly in the form of people telling, I had some eye rolling when I tried to explain it to people. I had people telling me that nobody would ever buy it. I had people say, why would somebody buy that when they could just use a bandana? I had somebody tell me that it was overkill to put art onto a Kula cloth because I had this big idea that I wanted them to look beautiful and intentional, so they would become these like fun conversation pieces. And somebody told me, nope, that's overkill. Nobody's ever going to buy it. And yeah, the big thing was really, this is a dumb idea. Nobody's ever going to buy it. Best of luck to you. And I feel like at that point, I was so far into the process that honestly, nothing could stop me. I feel like an idea is in its early phases, it's so fragile and it is liable to be broken by the limiting beliefs of others who, I might add, usually mean very well. They're acting typically from a place of fear that they carry in their own life, and they're projecting it out onto you. But I often ask myself, and I would sort of look at these people who were giving me this very well-intended advice and could tell that they were genuinely worried for me, right? Because I'm about to leave my job to pursue a cloth that absorbs urine. I get it. It's a little odd. But I kind of looked at how they were living their life and said, is this who I want to be taking advice from? Or am I going to trust this feeling that I have in my heart and my own intuition? And I am somebody who sort of had a lifetime of suppressing my own intuition in order to get validation from others because I wanted to do what they thought I should do. And so I was always suppressing what I wanted to do because it was reckless or irresponsible. And this was the first time, and I think it was that near-death experience that kind of had woken me up a little bit to like, what are you doing? Why are you so afraid to go for this? And so amidst all that criticism, I just would sort of allow it to process itself through me. And I would tell myself, this is their belief and that's okay, but it doesn't have to be mine. And then I would just keep going and keep going. And I'm so glad I did.
So, you know, I learned this from, so just talking about Kula cloth and, you know, haters, I learned from Ben at Hilltop Packs. I asked him like, what is his like favorite piece of gear? And he goes, it's my food bag. And of course you think food bag, man, there's Z Packs, there's Hyperlite. How is that your favorite? And he goes, because I printed my family on the food bag. And every time I'm on a backpacking trip, no matter how hard the trip is or how much I want to quit, I'm always touching that food bag and I'm looking at my family and it motivates me. And so when I was putting this podcast together, I started thinking like, man, the Kula cloth, you can customize the Kula cloth. So you can say, hey, I want this picture on it. So I just started thinking like, yeah, I mean, that would, you know, having a piece of gear where you customize it, how motivating is that? And then I'm like, wait a minute. The use of the Kula cloth, would you put your enemy or would you put like your family? I don't know.
I will tell you, I have done both. And it's interesting because I print a lot of custom Kulas and there's sort of I see the gamut of people who are like, I would never put my family on a Kula cloth. And other people are like, I want to have this personalized piece of gear where I can have this reminder of my favorite pet or my friends or a funny moment on the trail. And so I've put anything and everything you could possibly imagine on a Kula cloth. And that just delights me to no end because, number one, people are having fun with it. It's humorous. It's something totally personal and unique that they can carry. And number two, I actually think, you know, this is a piece of gear that is helping to take care of our bodies. And yes, it is for wiping pee, but there's something pretty miraculous about our bodies and what they do for us and how they keep us healthy out on the trail. And so depending on which way you look at it, it's either gross or it's this really miraculous, wonderful thing.
I wonder how many ex-husbands have been put on a Kula cloth.
I've done many husbands. I don't know how many ex-husbands. I don't know how many ex-husbands I've done. I have done many husbands, many boyfriends, many best friends, yeah. many girlfriends. Lots of pets.
Talking about the name, and also to the listeners, Kula Cloth is the company, but they offer way more than just the Kula cloth. And we'll get into that in a bit later. So I just want to throw that out there. But the name Kula, you know, it means community. How did you come about that?
So I was listening to a podcast with Sarah Blakely, who's the founder of Spanx, a company that makes sort of hosiery and apparel products. And in her podcast interview, she said that when she was naming Spanx, she had heard that a word that had a hard K sound in it was more memorable. And so I was sitting at my kitchen table and I did a quick Google search for mountains that start with K. And I came across a mountain called Kula Kangri, which was in Bhutan. And that was immediately sort of ding, 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 because I've been to Bhutan. So I've already got this special connection. And then I did a Google search of the word Kula, and I didn't want to do something too cliche and just pick a random sort of name from a different language and call it that. But what I discovered about the word Kula is that it's actually a word that is used in close to 60 different languages. So it's not just like selecting from one language. It's this sort of universal word, and it means community, and it means golden, and it means school. And so it had all these really beautiful, beautiful meanings to it. And I just instantly felt like that was the name I needed to use.
That's awesome. Early on, and maybe even now, were there any big failures or hilarious mistakes that have taught you a lesson?
Oh, man. Lot.
That's a whole nother episode.
The failures Anastasia has done while running a business could be a literal episode. Learning moments, we'll call them. In the early days of Kula, I was using what's called a 3PL, which is a third-party logistics partner to ship out all the Kulas, because I was attempting to ship them from my house and it got to be overwhelming. I couldn't even leave the house because I had to ship orders. And I didn't have any packaging for the Kulas yet. And so I just kind of like sent them loose down to this 3PL. And when they would get an order for a Kula cloth, they would just throw it into a mailer and ship it to the customer. And so I started getting all of these messages from people whose strap on the Kula was just like ripped off or missing. And I realized what was happening is that people were opening their package with a pair of scissors and cutting off the strap. And so I was basically replacing all of these Kulas. And I tried to make it very obvious, do not open with scissors, but it kept happening. Eventually, of course, this pushed me to design actual packaging, which is what I should have had to begin with. But you live and you learn. And I've also had printing errors where the printer printed an entire batch of fabric, a giant roll of fabric. They somehow miniaturized the print. So, I mean, this is thousands of dollars worth of fabric. And in the early days of the business, thousands of dollars of things sucks up almost everything that's in your bank account. And they printed this beautiful mountain print in in miniature. and what's been really cool though, is that I've always found a way to take the bloopers and to turn them into something good. And I think that's such an important skill to have, is that you can choose to be angry at yourself or at the printer, or, you know, waste your energy, like your precious creative energy. I could waste it yelling at people trying to get a refund or whatever the heck it is that I think I need. Or I can just say, okay, here, this is where I am. It's not where I wanted to be, but what door could open up for me here? And with the miniature printing, I suddenly was in the possession of all these thousands of Kulas that I couldn't really sell because the print was wrong, but I never would have had a marketing budget to kind of have these donation items before. And so I just started donating them to nonprofits, and it turned into this, it ended up morphing into our Kula for a Cause program. It created partnerships with nonprofits. It launched like other people sharing the product. It really helped us get the word out there about Kula. I mean, that was never my intent. It was just to do something meaningful. And I think that's something that has kept me sane as I've run the business, is like, anytime something happens that doesn't happen the way you plan, just go with the current and don't try to swim upstream and just see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, they're all opportunities.
Exactly. Yeah. If you see it as an opportunity, yep, it changes it.
Absolutely. So at what point did you sit back in that chair and go, I just created something real? This is a real business.
I think it was honestly the moment when I held the very, very first production run Kula that had like our actual fabric. Like it had been professionally sewed by a factory, the factory that we still work with, by the way. The very first time I was sitting in the post office parking lot in my Honda Fit, and I, you know, sort of open this package, and I just remember like holding it for the first time. And I mean, it's funny because I look back on those early Kulas and now I think they look terrible because they like a factory develops muscle memory for a product. Like they get better and mm-hmm. better at making it. And so the first ones that they made now to me look very rough, but back then it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. This came to life and it's real. And like, I get to ship this out to people. And I still have moments like that to this day, where I sort of look around at either events or, you know, I have employees now who are like shipping out orders. And I just think this is real. Like I'm actually doing the thing.
And also maybe think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a whole nother market for men too, because we can use it as a sweat.
Yeah,
we have bald-headed men like me.
We have a lot of guys who will attach them with a little retractable leash to their shoulder strap, and they use them as a sweat rag, a snot rag, or we actually have a growing segment of folks that have a designated Kula that they use as a post-travel bidet drying off cloth, because it's really just an antimicrobial cloth. And so they'll use their Kulo Clean travel bidet, and then they will just pat dry with a Kula. And we do make a stealth Kula, and a lot of men, I mean, there's guys out there, I have to say, there are guys out there who just rock the colorful Kulas and buy themselves like the most vibrant and bright Kulas because they love them. And I think that's so cool. But we also do have like a plain black one for people who might not want to be quite as showy.
Hey, if you're not blinging on the trail, go back home. That's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. So I just know I'm going to love the answer to this question. So what makes Cooler Cloth different from traditional backcountry hygiene solutions?
Every part of it is really intentional. And the fabric itself is antimicrobial, and it's designed to be waterproof on one side, so it's not getting your hands dirty with pee. It snaps closed, which helps you keep your backpack clean. It has reflective thread on it, so you can find it at night with your headlamp. I really think just the intentionality behind the design, and I can speak for the person who designed the Cool Cloth, because that was me, when I say that I literally lost sleep over it. I mean, I obsessed about every detail, and every single little piece of it was sort of put together and tested over and over and over again before we came up with the final design. And we're still working on ways to improve it. In fact, we're about to change our snap configuration to make it more to a different snap configuration that the customers are more excited about. I've been working on a new fabric option for Kula that, in my opinion, is going to perform a little bit better. And I'm always looking to improve it, but I think intentionality is the big piece of it.
So what features of the Kula Cloth are you most proud of?
I would say the art on the print, the waterproof side, because I feel like it's important that it's a beautiful piece of gear that people feel proud to put on their pack, and that it's not just some sort of afterthought rag. And then the reflective thread, because everybody told me that it was impossible to find retroreflective thread. Everybody said, get a heat transfer. And I said, no, I don't want a heat transfer because that's just going to peel off in the wash. And I did all the sourcing research on the reflective thread, figured out how we could actually sew it, because reflective thread is actually very difficult to sew with. It breaks in a lot of the sewing machines because it's very fragile. And so I did a lot of that. I did all the research on finding the product itself. And I love that feature.
As a user, little things like that are so important to a product. Backpacking mills. I can't read the back if I don't have my readers. And good to go. If you turn their package over on the back, whoever's idea it was, I can take off my I don't have to have my glasses, and I can read how much water do I need to put in, and how long should I?
That's so smart.
I don't need my glasses. You know, little things like that go a long way to the consumer, and yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Looking at the design of the Cooler Cloth, how important has the durability and sustainability been in the whole process to design it?
Really important, because the idea of the Kula is that it's going to be reusable for a long period of time. It's not meant to be a disposable product. And I have Kulas that I've literally been using for about 5 years. And I have tested them hand washing, in the washer dryer, making sure that they just don't fall apart, because that wouldn't live up to my standards. And then sustainability-wise, we use all eco-friendly fabrics and inks, and all of the products that we use are either, there's a sort of a sustainability certification for safety called Oikotex or Bluesign. All of the threads that we use either meet or exceed those sort of standards within the textile industry. And then on kind of the more local level, when we have scrap fabric, which is inevitable in any textile production, we've found ways to use that fabric to make other things. So instead of just throwing out a bunch of fabric, we've come up with other products that we can make from that fabric, because the textile industry is super wasteful. And I just absolutely hate the idea of throwing away fabric.
Yeah. Wow. Has there been big challenges? And this is kind of funny with all the companies that produce gear, there's always sourcing material challenges. So has that impacted you at all, or even finding the people that you may find the people that have the right material, but maybe the partnership isn't what you eventually want? And how has that been?
I will say there are some aspects that have been rough. We've experienced some, what I will delicately say, roughness with regards to fabric production and quality. I have really struggled with trying, like, our fabric is so unique that, and it's made specifically for us, that trying to source and create a brand new fabric is a very, very daunting task and something that I have literally no experience in. But I have enjoyed the process of learning how to do that. And I'm kind of excited about where I am in that process right now. So it's been a good, it's like the things that haven't worked well have pushed me to finding a much better solution. And right now I feel like I have a really good production setup and relatively simple ordering scheme for raw materials. Everything that we do currently is based in the United States, so I'm lucky that I haven't had to face too many issues with tariffs.
Yeah. So what do you think has been the hardest part, if you kind of step back and look at this whole Kula Cloth journey, kind of putting together this outdoor brand?
Really trying to stay present where I am and not need to be anywhere else has been a challenge at times. There is this, and just not overwork myself. And by that, I also mean just this constant mind activity around the business at times can be very, very exhausting. Like, the actual tasks I do on a daily basis are not difficult, right? It's answer email, answer questions, make decision. And those podcast. Are all, yeah, do podcast interview. Like, it's all relatively simple stuff that's not difficult. It's the emotional exhaustion that we often subject ourselves to as the business owner who sort of carries this weight on ourselves and this pressure to constantly be doing more and achieving more. And it's like you get where you wanted to be a few years ago, and you don't even stop to enjoy it because there's this infinitely dangling carrot in front of you and you're on to the next thing. And so there's this constant need for more and this sense that, like, at some point in the future, I'll be able to be happy and enjoy this. And that is a slippery flip and slope to be on. And I, as a result of that, I have done a lot of coaching and mentoring with folks who have really helped me kind of hone in some practices so that I can stay present, enjoy where I am, and not allow the business to define my life or dictate my happiness. You know, like, my happiness and how well Kula Cloth is doing should be two separate things. You know, if Kula Cloth is doing well, that isn't a quote unquote good day for me. And conversely, if Kula Cloth has a day where we have abysmal sales, like, how is that any less of a day in my life? And I think so many business owners have this issue of like tying their own sense of well-being and personal happiness to how their business is doing. And I've worked really hard to detach that and then just trying to stay present for my employees, like show up and support them the best that I can. Like that is my job, is to be as present, as peaceful, as joyful, as creative as possible so that the company continues to have the good forward moving momentum and not get myself stuck in this sort of state of lack and overthinking.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. You can even look at our hiking and backpacking journey, probably for most everybody. Like, it's never enough. You yeah. have a goal, you complete it. Okay, now what's next? What's next?
Right. What's next? And the question is, did you even, I look back at some of my super obsessive backpacking and climbing trips, and I was on one trip already thinking about having to plan the next one, like literally having anxiety about planning the next one, so much so that I missed out on enjoying the one that I was on. And I think that's this constant inability for us to be present. And so to me, that has been the most challenging part of running a business, is not being in my head and being able to be present and enjoy my life regardless of what's going on with Kula.
So with that being said, what has been the most unexpected, rewarding part of this whole journey?
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.